I'm going to start with a Star Woman statement here. She said, if we did have World War III and most of the humans were destroyed, does that mean that is karma for all these people? And will they eventually come back in a new world born as cleansed souls? For if our soul is forever, then doesn't that mean that the wicked, nasty, evil people will eventually have to come back and relearn from their mistakes and find their spiritual path? Well, yes, when we make mistakes, we always have to come back and go through the learning process that karma teaches us until we achieve perfection. One of the best examples of this is the movie Groundhog Day. Groundhog Day is in what Bill Murray did, and living that Groundhog Day over and over is an interesting correspondence to what we do with life. With him, it was just a day, but with us, it's an entire life. As you remember, Bill Murray lived that day over and over and over until he finally got it perfect. When he got it perfect, then he was allowed to wake up and enter into the real world. That's an interesting correspondence to the way reality is. We live our lives over and over and over until we achieve an amount of perfection that coming back doesn't really help that much after this perfection is achieved, so then we can then enter into a greater reality. Now, as far as more mass destructions go, more karma is at play here than just individual karma. Individual karma affects us in our individual lives and within our own sphere. But we, as a unit, are connected through a group life to our families, our nations, our groups, the whole planet, and so on. And the various groups and nations to which we are members of have their own karma. And even though we may be as innocent as a driven snow as an individual, we are subject to national karma, group karma, and the karma of the whole human race. And then even karma beyond that, the karma of the whole solar system and beyond. So we are subject to these things because, well, it's just like one of the cells in your body may be performing its job fine, but if you get in a car wreck, you're going to affect the productive cells as well as the non-productive cells. All the cells in your body will be affected. And there's certain collective events that happen on the earth that will affect everyone, and that's due to what we call group karma. Group karma is where the whole group is affected, and that's different than individual karma. As far as World War III goes, I certainly share Blaine's optimism that Jesus did not come, or is not coming, to destroy but to save. He seeks to save rather than destroy. And this is an extremely important point. The midpoint between the Piscean and the Aquarian Age was 1945, right at the end of World War II. So we've actually swung over the balance since 1945. So we're just got our big toe into the Aquarian Age, and it's going to take another 150 years or so before we're entirely in it. But the point of tension was World War II. And that, if we do our job correctly, that will be the major point of tension. There will be other points of tension, but that is like the point where the Aquarian Age is born. And but if we do our job, the doomsday of World War III, where 90% of the population is destroyed, doesn't have to happen. It could happen if we let it and don't do our part in making sure that terrorists are dominated and not allowed to wreak the havoc which they desire to do, as well as for several rogue nations. Barbara asks, JJ, did Jesus take bad karma with him when he was crucified? Also the apostles? Did the victims of 9-1-1 take bad karma with them? Actually, on an individual basis, Jesus had worked off his karma, and he didn't have any karma to take with him. He did this as an act of service, went through the crucifixion for a purpose other than paying off karma. On the other hand, the world itself had a heavy weight of karma at that age. And when Jesus was in the Garden of Gethsemane, he faced the dweller on the threshold for the entire planet, which is a sum total of all negative karma, you could say. So when he struggled in the garden and bled from every pore, as the scripture says, he struggled with the world karma, and that way took upon himself the sins of the world. In a sense that he swung the balance of world karma. So instead of the world karma engulfing us, it began to lessen from that point on. As far as the apostles go, most of them did have karma to pay off, and they paid it off, a lot of their karma off in service. When they taught the teachings of Christ and spread them and elevated hope in mankind, that was a means of them paying off the negative karma from their past. As far as the people of 9-1-1, some of them, or quite a number of them, probably had significant amount of karma that they paid off in the disaster. There were probably a handful of people that were just in the wrong place at the wrong time. But quite often, disasters that we're caught in are a means of us paying off karma and learning our lessons. Those who affected the disaster on 9-1-1 will eventually, when they come back and are reborn, they will have some crazy suicide person interfere with their life and family in a way that they had done, so that they can learn their lessons. Unless, of course, they choose the path of service as the apostles and other great people in history have done. And through service, remember, we can pay off karma. Sometimes we catch a glimpse, either through regression or just regular memory, of a past life. And we say, hey, if that's true, then I learn ABC here, and I need to do this to pay off some karma. And you get a feel of how you can use the knowledge from that past life, or what you can do to rectify wrongs you did in that past life. It's important that we can grasp those things. But we don't have to go back completely and remember to grasp them. We can go back by reflection. You may just be thinking, you know, I really feel that I should learn to be an artist. Why should I learn to be an artist? Or let's say, who was it that's, was it Cheryl? Was it, Cheryl, where are you? There you are. Well, you're doing service work, right? Let's say, she's not getting paid any money for it. Now, why is she doing this? Why does she feel so motivated? It could be connected with a past life. It might be she just has a below-the-consciousness memory of it that is motivating her, that inwardly she knows she needs to do stuff like this to serve, and it helps her to pay off karma. Or maybe in a past life, other people really helped her, and she has a need to repay that, you know, and pay it forward type situation. And so it's not always, the benefit of memory of past lives isn't always come through a clear vision where we remember names, places, dates, things like this. But it comes through impulses that we have. And this is part of the memory. This is part of the memory of the past life that's pushing us forward. And so the past lives of us, our immediate past lives, of say the couple dozen back anyway, can be useful to obtain. But we have to be careful about them, because when they're revealed through the soul, then they can be very helpful. Sometimes, if they're revealed prematurely, it can be a distraction. Like, let's say Bill David over there was Napoleon in a past life. He, all of a sudden, he got his memory back. You know, he would think, oh, man, I need to round up some soldiers. We'll conquer the world. He'd probably lose interest in, well, who wants to sell real estate anymore, you know? I need to go back and redeem France. So it would be a big distraction if Bill David learned he was Napoleon. But let's say with Cheryl, her soul maybe is saying that, you know, in a past life you accumulated a certain debt, and the way you can repay it is through service, and here's the avenue for service, go for it. Did you feel really like it's something you're like supposed to do? Do you have a feeling connected with that service?
Yeah. There have also been like a nurse and a monk in like 20 lives too, and it's just like in her like DNA. So, well, no, I mean, it doesn't always have to be a bad thing that's calling you toward it.
Yeah. Except if you're a nurse and monk for too long, your soul will produce a distraction for you. Because say you've been a monk for like two lifetimes, your soul will think, this guy is wasting his time. He's learned his lessons from being a monk. And so he will be born in this life, and he'll still want to be kind of a monk again. And something will happen. Maybe he'll have a dad, and he says, kid, you're going to military school. I don't want to go to military school. He says, well, you're going, and that's it. And so he sends him off to military school and just completely distracts him from monkeys type thinking. And so what the soul does, you know, he rebels at that, and he thinks that God is just must be mad at him, but really his soul is trying to lead him toward something new, something different, so he can learn something, because he's learned all he can from being a monk at that period of time. So it's important that we contemplate within ourselves. And a lot of people say to me, well, I wish I could remember all my past lives. It's really frustrating not to remember. But the way I look at it, I've remembered some things and other things I don't, and there's a lot of things I wish I could remember. But the key is to just accept whatever comes. I found in my life that when the time comes that I really need something, there it is. And if it isn't there, then I think, well, my soul doesn't think it's important to reveal to me yet, or give to me yet, or make the door open yet. So I'm going to go with what I got to the highest of the knowledge that I have. And so this is what we have to do. We have to go, like I say, written so often in my book, go with the highest you know. If you go with the highest you know, then it will just be a certain amount of time before something else will be revealed. And then something else, and something else. And as a little reward at the end, on your last life, it is said, you will have the opportunity of reviewing every life you've ever had. In this universe, that is. They say the Buddha was able to review every life that he ever had. And that would be interesting, wouldn't it? Be sit back and, oh man, let's see where I was here. Boy, I screwed up on that one. Oh man, I lost a really good woman on that one. Man, I made my kids hate me in this one. Boy, I deserved everything I got in my life. Now I understand why I had to get tortured on the rack in the Middle Ages or whatever, you know. So if when that day comes, and for most of us it's still quite a ways away, so don't expect it to happen tomorrow. When that day comes and we are able to see every life that we've ever lived, which would be approximately 1,000 lives according to the esoteric teachings. When you're able to imagine seeing 1,000 lives, but the first 950 of them are probably pretty boring, you know, because pretty routine stuff going on, but then you got savvy and you got, you started doing some really interesting things your last 50 or 100 lives. And then you go through the labors of Hercules, you perform 12 monumental feats of service to mankind, and then you obtain the liberation, and then you get a look and see every life that you've ever lived, and that would be interesting. But the thing you will wind up with when you look over all these lives is you will find out that the teaching that is in circulation right now is entirely wrong. And what is in circulation, and it started with a statement somebody made about 20 years ago, and somebody said, life is not fair. They used to say that God is fair and everything works out in the end, and then somebody come up about 20, 30 years ago and said, no, that's wrong. Life is just not fair. You know, you try to make it fair, it's not fair. But when the time comes that we can look over every life that we've lived, we will see everything balanced out perfectly, that life was indeed completely 100% fair. Now, if we take a little slice where you had a life with some hard times, then it will not seem fair at all. When you live a life where, you know, the some people that are very evil, very heartless, get rich, live easy lives, good people get cancer and have kids that are rebels and have accidents, and you think, boy, it's just not fair. But when everything is said and done and we're able to look over the whole scheme of creation, we will come up with a conclusion: God is fair. In the days of Jesus, the beast manifested itself through the Roman Empire, but there were many that didn't submit, that allowed themselves to be thrown to the lions rather than be subject and told what to do by an unjust authority. They allowed themselves to suffer death rather than have that happen, and they were not subject to the beast, even though the beast had them in captivity, and even though the beast forced them against their wills, many of them did not submit. And consequently, they fulfilled the words of Christ where he says, whoever gives his life for my sake shall find it. So whoever gave their life for the sake of Christ will find it again right afterwards, their life more abundantly. They'll be reborn in a situation much better than what they left. So the Christian martyrs and the martyrs for every good cause that gave their life found it again whenever they wanted to a short time later in a much better situation. When you read about the Middle Ages, it's interesting how men that have gone down in history as some of them great men, like let's take Sir Thomas More, for instance. He's recognized as a great man by a lot of scholars. You know, he wrote some interesting books and was a legal scholar, and I think the Catholic Church has even made him a saint, I think. But what few people know about the guy is he had a torture chamber in his basement. And he participated in putting people to death, burning heretics at the stake. He was a powerful person. But for those that disagreed with him and were heretical, he sought to destroy them. And when you read about the Middle Ages, it's interesting. Many people were this way, like Martin Luther is also. Everybody thinks he was just a great guy. You know, he was persecuted when he began to break off from the church, and many of his followers were put to death. But then when he got a little power, what did he do? People that disagreed with him, he had them burned at the stake. And he had them persecuted and tortured. So he wasn't any better than the other guys. And yet he's recognized overall as one of the great souls in our history. But when he got power, just like Hercules, those who disagreed with him that were different from him, he called heretics, and he had them persecuted, even though he'd went through a similar thing and should have learned. Okay?
So to achieve unity, Martin Luther, Sir Thomas More, other people respected in history as making a Herculean effort of some kind, those who disagreed with them, they had them killed. And this often happens. Today, fortunately, we have laws that protect us from having this happen, but we can see that many people that are otherwise maybe fairly significant souls will still have to go after those who do not agree with them and to achieve unity to get them out of the way somewhere rather than to seek their cooperation. What's interesting about Sir Thomas More, he was completely cooperative with his king, and the king was finally suspicious that he was betraying him or not completely cooperating with him and had Sir Thomas More killed. Yet Sir Thomas More did the same thing to those under him. Anyone that was a heretic, he supported having them killed. And to achieve unity during most periods of history, what you did, those who disagreed with them, you just had them killed. And so this has often been a trap that has been embraced by many great Herculean disciples of the past 6,000 years or however many years we've been here. And they've fallen into this trap. To achieve unity, they felt they have to eliminate anyone who disagrees. Just have people that agree around you. So Sir Thomas More and Martin Luther and all these guys probably came back in another life and had to redeem themselves for their illusion about unity. Instead of achieving unity through just doing away with your enemies, maybe they came back and maybe they were part of the founding fathers, who knows? And maybe they did something like, through peaceful means, created a better system that would save the lives and freedom of many people. And we don't know exactly how it happened with these individuals, but they would have to come back, redeem themselves.
One of the criticisms of the belief in reincarnation is that, well, if you're going to have another life, then you can just screw around in this one and make up for it in the next. As a matter of fact, among some of the common people in the East do think this way to some degree. But when one matures a little bit spiritually, it's the truth about reincarnation is a very positive thing. For instance, when I found out about it, it didn't make me want to take the attitude, well, if I get another chance in the next life, I can just screw up in this one. Because when you think about it, it's kind of silly reasoning. That's like saying, well, I'll go rob a bank and go to jail for 5 years because, you know, I'll get out in 5 years and I'll get another chance. But the 5 years in jail is a tremendous inconvenience. If you screw up your whole life and have to come back and live another entire life in undergoing tremendous suffering and trial and error, you're wasting a tremendous amount of time that you could be well spent enjoying yourself. So once the person sees reincarnation with a true view of things, then it actually makes you want to try harder, not try less. One thing I find interesting is many of the average believers have no concept of time. For instance, many of the Christians believe that if they commit certain sins, they'll go to hell and be there for all eternity and burn with fire and be with the devil and pitchforks and tremendous suffering is envisioned here. Yet many times when such a one will, with such a belief system, sees a gal that attracts him, he'll sacrifice all that eternity for a night of pleasure with the wrong woman or wrong person. Now, if the person really had a concept of what eternity was, he wouldn't. And if he really believed that he was going to suffer in some fiery brimstone area for eternity, you would never sacrifice eternity for a day. But what's interesting is people don't have a perspective about what an eternity might be, or they would re-examine the whole idea of burning in hell forever. So when is a person ready to believe in reincarnation and have it be a positive thing in his life? The answer is when his mind has a true perspective on what time is and what cause and effect is. For instance, in this life, a person doesn't want to go to jail for even 1 year, and he would probably avoid a night of pleasure to avoid a year in jail. Yet others that don't have a perspective of what eternity is would yield a night of pleasure to have an eternity in the fires of hell, so to speak. That doesn't make any sense at all. But what's interesting is that there's some people that can put things in perspective and live their life accordingly, and others that can't, that don't even have an idea of what burning in hell for eternity would entail. And for those that are willing to give up, so to speak, heaven for an eternity in hell for just a night of pleasure, are probably not ready for a lot of truths, including reincarnation. But if a person does have a little bit of perspective on the cause and effect and what can happen to him in reality, then the belief in reincarnation or the knowledge of it is a very positive thing. What it did for me is it made me adjust my life so the cause and effect in my life was projected into the future. So the things that I do here in this life now is not just for the effects a year or 2 years down the road. I'm looking maybe hundreds or thousands of years down the road, because it makes you live your life from a much broader perspective when you know that you're going to have effects that are going to take place way down the road that will either be to your advantage or disadvantage.
Thanks for listening to the New Age Christian Synthesis podcast. If what you heard rang true and you'd like to find out more, please visit J.J. Dewey's website at freeread.com. That's freeread.com.